Okay, recognizing again the time is short here, so I'm going to jump right in. Starting off with Betsy Ward, who is the president and the CEO of the USA Rice Federation.
Thank you. Well, I know we've had about a minute, so I'm going to go quickly and just start by talking about rice and Cuba. The Cuban market for rice is not theoretical. It's real, it's large, and it's compelling. Cuba is the second largest importer of rice in the Americas, and there was a time, a long time ago, when Cuba was our number one export market. Anyone who's visited Cuba knows that rice is the mainstay of their diet, present in nearly all Cuban meals. Their annual per capita consumption is one of the highest in the world, about 200 pounds a year. That's a lot of rice, compared to the U.S., where we consume about 27 pounds per year. So it's easy to understand why some in Cuba say it can't be called a meal if it doesn't have rice. Cuba does grow rice. They grow about 400,000 metric tons a year, but to meet their high demand, they import about 600,000 metric tons. I'm proud to say that our industry has been pressing for open trade and travel with Cuba since the mid-1990s. We were the first U.S. commodity to re-enter Cuba in 2001 at the Havana Trade Fair, and we've continued to sponsor trade missions, participated in forums here and in Cuba, and exhibited at the Havana Trade Fair about eight times. And we did have sales during the early 2000s. We sold about $64 million. That was the top sales in 2004. When the U.S. government policy changed, our sales have fallen to zero starting in 2009. Our loss has been Vietnam's gain. They are the primary supplier of rice to Cuba. But we think it's a loss for the Cuban people as well. They're forced to eat an inferior product that travels 16,000 miles to get to them. It's less than 700 miles from Havana to U.S. rice ports. And we know the Cuban people actually prefer U.S. rice. When I've traveled there and when we were selling rice there, consumers, when they learned that U.S. rice had arrived, they would line up outside stores for hours to get a chance to get some, and the stores couldn't keep our rice on the shelves. So given the Cubans' preference for U.S.-grown rice and the obvious logistical advantages our rice farmers enjoy, I think we can quickly displace the lower-quality Asian-origin rice and could capture more than half of this market within 5 years, once any and all restrictions on trade financing are lifted. So I'm thrilled to be here today, proud to be a member of our new coalition, and to be so many steps closer to free and unfair trade with Cuba. Thank you.
Thank you, Betsy. Alan Tracy, who is the president of U.S. Wheat Associates.
Thank you. In 1998, some of our U.S. Wheat Associate members, particularly the Kansas Wheat Commission and the North Dakota Wheat Commission and others, paid for a shipment of flour to be donated to Cuba. U.S. Wheat facilitated that shipment, went to Cuba and helped the millers use it. They were ecstatic. It was just 20 tons of flour, but their bakers were able to use it and it was so much more suited to their 100-gram roll that is a standard part of the diet, well behind rice, but still the standard part of the diet, that they really wanted to have it. And as soon as the legislation allowed it, we began exporting in 2002. The donation had been to Caritas, by the way, the CARE affiliate. It was not to the government. But once we began to make sales, we gradually moved up to about half of that market, just under half of that market from 2004 to 2008, tapered off down to about to zero in 2011. Long term, the prospects are that it should be about a million ton market. They import nearly that much, plus some flour. Just to put it in perspective, we should be able to garner 80 to 90% of that market as we do for the rest of the Caribbean. It's simply logical. They like the product. In today's dollar terms, that's about $250 million a year. And to paraphrase Everett Dirksen, year after year, that adds up to real money. So we recognize that there is a lot of work to do, but we greatly welcome this first step. To us, the real meaning of this step by the administration is that it puts them in favor of fostering trade rather than frustrating it. We look forward to the lifting and changing of some of the regulations that are currently in place that caused the decline. The Cubans simply got frustrated with having to deal with us, and our competitors found their way in there again. So That's, again, the first step. We've long called for the elimination of the embargo, including in the Journal of Commerce in 1999, I believe it was. So we look forward to working with the coalition on those future steps on behalf of U.S. wheat producers and on behalf of the logical and sensible relations with the people of Cuba. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan.
That was Alan Tracy, president of the U.S. Wheat Associates. This is live at the Press Club at the launch of the U.S. Agriculture Coalition for Cuba on C-SPAN Radio.
The American Farm Bureau Federation.
Thank you, Paul.
This is Dale Moore.
One of the things, we've got a lot of details that have been shared. We've got some very, honorable folks who have come up and talked about how important opening trade with Cuba is. When we step back and look at this, I don't think there's a farm organization, commodity organization, or ag industry sector partner that hasn't had on their books for some time the importance of lifting this embargo. We fight these unilateral embargoes on so many different fronts over so many different years, so this one has stuck around far too long. As my boss, President Stallman, said when the president made this announcement, he said, "Do you have any idea where our talking points are on Cuba?" And I had to admit, no, sir, this is not an issue that we've had really on the radar. This has popped up. So it was a very pleasant surprise right before Christmas. It's something that our farmers and ranchers across the country appreciate, the effort to get this process started. And as you all have seen just a little bit ago, it's great to see the bipartisan effort up on the Hill already rolling to help us make this a reality on an even broader sense. I could add a lot of points and anecdotes and stories, but I've already got the 1 minute signal out of the corner of my eye, so thank you all very much.
Thanks, Dale. Next, we have Stephen Sothman, who's the president of the U.S. Hide and Leather Association, and he's here today representing the North American Meat Institute.
Thank you, Paul. Appreciate it. Yeah, we were told moving up here that it cut our speeches down to 1 minute from four, and trying to figure out what is the most important thing to say in 1 minute is very difficult when you think it's all important. But for the meat and poultry industry, one of the primary goals, I guess, of this coalition is to increase the economic prosperity of the Cuban people. But what I think people don't realize is how much of a benefit that'll create for our own industry. The goal offers a direct benefit to U.S. poultry producers, especially as Cuban consumers seek to add higher value animal proteins to their diets. One of the first products a newly minted middle class consumer buys in the global economy is additional animal proteins with their additional income. Cuba is a real market for U.S. poultry. Despite existing financial burdens under the embargo, U.S. poultry exporters have already established a substantial foothold in the market. Through October of last year, the U.S. exported $128 million worth of poultry meat to Cuba, and we saw a high of $160 million in 2012. This is a real market for us already, but these numbers could be better. Finally, we think it's important for our industry to see what's on the horizon in terms of expected future gains in this market. With the expected future expansion in tourism and hospitality in Cuba, U.S. meat and poultry companies are in a prime position to supply those growth industries with the high-quality meat products and supplies they'll need to service some of their premium foreign visitors that'll be coming to the islands. This may have implications for other markets as well, especially if we receive some European tourists or some tourists from TPP countries that might be looking to U.S. meat and poultry for the first time via one of the trade agreements. We want them to know that if they're visiting Cuba, that they are eating a Texas ribeye or an Iowa pork tenderloin. So thank you.